I'm David Martin Davies, and coming up on The Source, the Texas debate over THC products has intensified. Lawmakers, business owners, and state leaders are clashing over how to control hemp-derived cannabinoids. These are the THC gummies, vapes, and drinks that are being sold in vape shops and convenience stores across the state. There has been massive consumer demand for these substances and also mass outcry for regulating or even outright banning them to protect public health. Earlier this year, the Texas legislature passed SB 3, which would have banned virtually all consumable hemp products. But Governor Greg Abbott vetoed that bill. And then recently, Abbott issued an executive order directing state agencies to restrict the sales of THC products. But there's been a lot of confusion about that executive order. This is a community conversation. We want to hear from you. Call in at 833-877-8255. That's what's coming up on The Source, but first, this news.
Support for The Source podcast comes from UT Health San Antonio, South Texas' largest academic research institution, where what is discovered in its labs translates into life-changing patient care. More at uthealthsa.org.
Are you ready to amplify your impact through workplace giving? Many employers match donations, doubling or even tripling your support for TPR's local and global programming. Some employers even match gifts from retirees and spouses, so your contribution can go even further. Check if your company participates today by visiting tpr.org/workplacegiving.
Live from the John L. Santico studio in downtown San Antonio, this is The Source from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Have you ever walked into a convenience store or maybe with a vape shop and seen the vast display of different THC products for sale? There are gummies, drinks, chocolates, and snacks all offered. They're all offering a safe and legal way to relax or catch a buzz. But how safe are they really? Can their labels be trusted? And are they really legal, or are they just kind of sort of legal? Because there are a lot of questions. Texas is the focal point of an intense political and legislative conflict over the future of consumable hemp-derived products containing THC, such as Delta 8 and Delta 9. The state had nearly an outright virtual ban on THC, but Governor Abbott had a veto, and that didn't happen. And now Abbott has signed an executive order calling for a regulatory framework. Still, Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick is championing the total ban, labeling these products a poison, and he argues that effective regulation is impossible. So let's get some answers about what is happening. You can call in with your questions and comments at 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. We're joined this hour by Cynthia Cabrera. She is the president of the Texas Hemp Business Council. Cynthia, welcome to The Source.
Thank you so much.
Also with us is Dr. Catherine Neal Harris, Rice University's Baker Institute for Public Policy. And Dr. Catherine Neal Harris, welcome to The Source.
Thank you for having me.
So, Cynthia, let me ask you first off, because you really have your fingers on the pulse of what is happening in the state of Texas. What is happening right now with THC products that are sold in these stores?
Well, right now there's not a lot different happening. I mean, the industry has had regulation in Texas since 2019, absent notably an age gate, which we have pushed for the past two or three sessions and never really got any traction on. But in the governor's executive order, there is an age gate that is supposed to go into effect immediately, which is fantastic. So right now, everybody is waiting to see what rulemaking looks like. It's going to be shared between TABC, which is the alcohol side, and then DSHES, which is where the current administrative rules and regulations reside. So a lot of people are just waiting to kind of see how those rules shake out. There are already a lot of rules on the books, so it'll be interesting to see what changes they want to make.
Well, we should say that on September 1st, THC vapes were taken off the shelf, right?
THC vapes were taken off the shelf, and they were given to the medical marijuana program as part of HB 46. So they were moved from one industry to the other industry.
That's a big change, I would think.
It is a big change. So if someone wants to get vapes now, they'll have to go through their doctor versus being able to go into some a store and purchase the vapes they were purchasing legally previously.
And then you mentioned the age gate, that is 21 and up. You have to be 21 and up, not just to buy one of these products, but even to go into these stores?
To enter. That's how it's written. So I don't know, you know, what will come out of rulemaking, but that's how it's written currently.
And that is effective immediately. So I was really not clear reading the executive order because there was so much about his order telling the, you know, the TABC or the Department of Health and Human Services to get involved. So that is like that is a rule in effect right now and, well, and enforced.
TABC is having their first meeting on Tuesday, this coming Tuesday. So they will have a meeting. They will declare an emergency and they will just put in that 21 and over effective immediately.
Okay. And a lot of these stores had this, but it was pretty much voluntarily.
Yes, it was voluntary because the lieutenant governor did not want an age gate. And so it was up to the industry to self-regulate and just age gate on their own.
All right. So there's a lot of other parts to this executive order, and we'll get into that. But Dr. Catherine Neal Harris, what do you see happening right now on the ground with the fact that we didn't get the ban, we had the veto, we weren't able to pass a regulatory framework in the special session. We're depending on the Governor Greg Abbott, his executive order to try to put that framework in place. How do you see things right now in Texas in terms of regulating THC products? Or do you see it as something good is happening?
Well, I think that the governor certainly with the age gate took a stand on that, you know, as Cynthia said, a lot of folks in the industry have supported an age gating measure. And, you know, that was a very big component of this executive order. I expect there to be, you know, very little pushback on that. Beyond that, there is a lot in this executive order around rules, you know, directing these agencies to establish rules around, you know, record keeping, for example, or to increase licensing fees, to clarify testing requirements. And, you know, really the devil's in the details. We don't know how all of that is going to look. And we're sort of waiting. Beyond that, you had mentioned, you know, September 1st, the ban on vapes going into effect. And, you know, that certainly was a pretty significant part of the industry. And, you know, we are seeing that go away. You know, I've seen reports from some retailers who are, you know, selling, for example, empty cartridges that people can then fill on their own. But certainly that, I think, is a big blow to the industry. On the medical marijuana side, the House Bill 46 does direct there to be rules to allow for vaping devices through the medical program. We have not seen those rules yet, so those products are not yet available. And so that's another thing that we're kind of waiting on to see and to see what will become available through that route.
And do you think, Catherine, that there is confusion still in the marketplace over, like, what are the rules? What's going to be happening?
Yeah, I mean, I would say that there still is confusion. I mean, I saw a lot of confusion during the hearings around some of the legislation where, you know, you had folks saying that, you know, the products on the market, the Delta 8 products, for example, on the market were not legal when in fact they very much were legal according to current Texas law. There are just folks that did not like that. I think there's still confusion, for example, around Delta 9 and, you know, what's hemp-derived Delta 9 versus marijuana. You know, I'm of the opinion that, you know, moving forward, it does make a lot more sense to try to talk more specifically about THC because the distinction that we used to have in place historically for hemp and marijuana is kind of we're slowly losing the meaning of that when you start to get into these different hemp products. And so I do think that there is certainly still a lot of confusion. I would like to see more education around the products that are on the market. And in his executive order, the governor did have a few lines in there about informing consumers. Again, that's something that we have to see what that would actually look like in practice.
I did go to my neighborhood vape shop the day before that September 1st law about vape, THC vapes going into effect to see what they were doing. And when, were they giving it away? Are they in sale? What are they? And they were just boxing them up. And I guess they were shipping them back to the manufacturer or something. But they were certainly taking that new ban seriously, and they were reacting to it. You know, they definitely were trying to follow the law in that way. Our phone lines are open. If you've got a question, a comment, if you run a shop, if you frequent a shop, what do you see? What are your questions do you have? Give us a call about THC in Texas, 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. This is a one-minute break, and we'll be right back. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio.
Support for this podcast of The Source comes from Texas Mutual Insurance Company. They are committed to helping policyholders build strong and thriving businesses through their exceptional service. More at texasmutual.com/texansdeliver. Texas Mutual. Texans get it.
You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Safety for kids, freedom for adults. That was Governor Greg Abbott's summary of his approach to the regulatory framework that he put out when talking about what he wants to do with THC in Texas. So he has this 21-year-old gate, as we're calling it. You have to be 21 or older in order to purchase sales of THC items in Texas, according to his executive order. But there's a lot of other things happening in here. Also, Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick is still calling for a total ban, labeling these products poison. And he says that a effective regulation is just impossible. You can call in with your questions and comments as we talk about what's happening with THC regulation and sales in Texas, 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. Cynthia Cabrera, president of the Texas Hemp Business Council. I mean, you've been calling for regulation all along, haven't you?
Well, we've supported the regulation that has been in place since 2019 all along, and we have been calling for an age gate and a couple of other things.
Like what?
In addition, well, the age gate, child-resistant packaging, you know, we think that should be a standard that was not included. And, you know, I have to give Texas credit because when they legalized and regulated hemp-derived products back in 2019, they did a fairly comprehensive job. They just didn't get to anything. And it's impossible to get something right, you know, perfect the first time out. But I do have to give Texas, you know, a pat on the back for doing a good job. So there were some missing elements, and we are supportive of making sure that those missing elements are added.
And Dr. Catherine Neal Harris at Rice University's Baker Institute for Public Policy, you have pointed out that there were consumer risks for having an unregulated hemp environment in Texas. What were those risks?
Yeah. So, you know, as with any kind of impairing product, right, if there's a demand for it, somebody is going to supply the demand. It's a basic economic principle. And when you look at the hemp market, there's certainly a demand for these products. We've also had the market now in place for 5 years. And if you just try to take away that market, the demand isn't going to go away and neither is the supply. And what will happen, though, is that that supply shifts to an unregulated space where the regulations that are currently on the books will no longer apply and you no longer know what you're getting. And so all of the concerns, all of the consumer safety concerns that we have currently get magnified when they're in an illicit drug market. And we can look at all other kinds of drugs. If you look at the overdose crisis, that's another one where the issues with the supply have created increased risks for users. And, you know, that would be the same kind of thing that would happen with hemp. You know, it's the hemp dry products, they can be, they can cause impairment. And, you know, that's something that now the state has some responsibility to regulate and to protect the safety of it, of its residents. And that's why regulation is so important.
Well, let's hear from our listeners. We've got a caller, Irene. And let's get Irene on the air. And go ahead, Irene, you're on the air.
Hi, yes. Thank you for taking my call. I was just asking the question. I suffer from mental illness for over 25 years and have wanted to take THC or something that would help me do that legally, but I have had like tremendous, you know, just trouble trying to find a provider, a medical provider here in San Antonio, Texas, that can prescribe that without being led to going somewhere online where the visit seems a little sketchy. And if I take the chance to pay that cost to get a medical permit, I just feel very insecure that what I'm purchasing online is going to actually be suitable for here in Texas. Is there anything or anywhere that people like myself with mental illness or who suffer from chronic pain could, you know, help narrow the search to finding a medical provider to help with that prescription?
Irene, thank you for that great question. You bring up a lot of great points, but let me turn to Cynthia Cabrera to just try and give you an answer.
So, hi, Irene. The hemp-derived cannabinoid market is not part of the Texas Compassionate Use Program. That's the medical program that you're referring to. And that's not actually like my lane. I do know that the doctors that participate in the TCUP program are specialists in their field of expertise. You know, they're board certified. So if you have chronic pain, they might, you know, they'll be a chronic pain doctor or something like that. But I really can't tell you how to navigate the medical marijuana program because that is not part of our industry. That's not what right. We do.
Dr. Catherine Neal Harris, I mean, the TCUP has been criticized for being too restricted. And what's happening there?
Yeah. So, hi, Irene. And I just to note, I don't know which websites you've gone to. As far as the access goes currently in Texas, if you go to Texas Original or there's also Good Blend are two of the main functioning dispensaries in Texas currently. They usually can connect you with a physician, as Cynthia said, a licensed physician in their field. That can prescribe different THC products for your condition. My mother suffers from chronic back pain that's caused by a neurodegenerative illness, and I've gotten her on the medical program in the state. I will say that the products are of good quality. The only thing, if you mentioned having chronic pain and mental illness, chronic pain was just recently added. So you should be able now, I believe, to find relief for that condition. As far as mental illness, it would depend a bit on what that is. But I would encourage you to look at those providers as they are the ones that are licensed in the state. And the products that you would purchase through them are legal. So that I would say is one avenue to explore.
Catherine, people have, I'm taking their word for it. I haven't investigated it myself, but going through the TCUP program can be costly compared to buying a THC product off the shelf. And that's
yes.
So talk about that.
Well, yes, the cost is certainly higher for the THC that goes through the medical program. And, you know, one of the ideas behind the expansion, was that if you add chronic pain to the registry, if you increase the number of providers, if you allow the providers to have satellite locations, meaning that they can store their products in more than one location, currently they cannot do that. So, for example, San Antonio, you know, the providers aren't that far from there, but they have to drive the product to Irene that day. There's been some changes in the rules that are intended in part to reduce the cost associated with the program. Certainly, however, the costs are higher when you compare them to those in the hemp industry. And, you know, one reason, again, for that is the higher level of regulation that the TCUP currently has. As far as the hemp products go, you know, there's not as much gatekeeping there from the state as there is in the medical program. And so, you know, if anyone is using the hemp products for medical reasons, I would strongly encourage them to seek out, you know, reputable sources, not the gas station type of things, but reputable sources where they can really get full information on the products.
But Dr. Catherine Neal Harris, a lot of people will go to the gas station and they will get that product. You know, we have so many people without insurance in the state of Texas. There's a tremendous need for these types of things. And the problem that people are having is there's a lack of confidence. You could hear it in Irene's question that there's we don't know what's in these products, and that's the issue that they may have. So will the executive order from Greg Abbott, he talks about testing and labeling and licensing and all these things, will that create an environment where you have a better idea of what you will be getting, and therefore you'll have better confidence about if you want to go that route?
I certainly hope so. I wish I could have a more definitive answer than that. But without the rules being written out, or without them being available, we don't know what it's going to look like in practice. One example of a rule that could help, at least in my opinion, and this was something that was discussed during the legislative session, was having a product registry. So any product that is sold in the state has to be registered with the Department of State Health Services, if that's going to be the oversight agency, so that it's very easy to see if a product that's sold in a store has been approved by the state for sale. And that kind of makes it easier on the enforcement side to ensure that those products have accurate certificates of analysis that say what's in the product and that those are accurate and verified. And it makes it easier for the consumer to have confidence that, okay, this thing, the state says this product can be sold here and that it's safe. That we don't know how that will work in practice. We don't even know right now if that will be a component of the regulation that, you know, was directed by Governor Abbott in this executive order. We have to wait and see. But that would certainly be the kind of thing I would envision as helping to improve the safety of the products that are currently on the market.
And Dr. Catherine O'Harris, want to ask you, go back to this 21 age. Is you've written a lot about the impacts of these products that could have on young people. Is 21 the right age limit?
Well, 21 is sort of the standard, right? I mean, that's the standard for alcohol. That's the standard in the recreational marijuana industry is 21. The research that we have that looks at the impacts of THC on the developing brain, the brain is not fully developed until about age 25. So there are calls, from the medical community and from others who have recommended increasing the age actually to 24 or 25, for, you know, the sale of any kind of THC product. I believe actually this was debated recently in Colorado, and the proposal to increase the age got sort of just voted down very rapidly. There isn't a whole lot of political appetite for it. I also think, again, you have to balance sort of the concerns, the public health concerns with access to these things with the reality on the ground, which is that the highest use rates of any substance are among individuals between the ages of 18 and 25. And so while maybe we want to discourage heavy use in that population, prohibiting it, banning it, isn't necessarily the answer either, because, again, there's always going to be an illicit market that doesn't care what age you are.
And Dr. Neil Harris, should we be asking the question if this is even within the governor's authority? I mean, we have a legislature. This is supposed to be their job.
Yeah, well, that's, I think, a question that has been raised. And I think, certainly he has the power to make this executive order. I think that there is a potential for, depending on what the rules look like, for some of those rules to be challenged in court. The other aspect of this executive order is that when the legislature meets next session, they could pass legislation that would then supersede this executive order. So that's one of the executive order, the benefits of it is that it's more expedient, that he can go around the legislature. On the other hand, it does bypass that rulemaking process, and also can be less permanent, because the legislature could work on a kind of compromise legislation next session that would override this executive order. So again, I think it depends on how the rules shape up. We'll see. There could possibly be some legal challenges to that, but we just don't know yet.
Well, the next session would be almost 2 years from now, and that would basically leave Texas in the Wild West of this industry. And clearly, I mean, you've written that that wouldn't be a very good idea.
No, right. I agree. It wouldn't be a good idea. I think, you know, and as Cynthia said this, the legislature did have the opportunity during the session to address the issue of age gating separately from the issue of broader regulation. They did not do that. So, you know, I think that the governor, this was his effort to say, like, we can't just leave this status quo until 2027. It seemed to me, you know, after the second special session, there was not an appetite for an immediate third session. I mean, it's still possible that could be called in this interim, but we, you know, we don't know. And I think that the governor was saying, yeah, I don't want the status quo to be like this for another, you know, 2 years. So I'm going to do something now. And that's what this executive order was. Mm-hmm. We have to see what the rules are going to be.
All right. Well, we got to let you go. We're glad we had you for the half hour, but I know you're busy. So Dr. Catherine Neal Harris, Rice University's Baker Institute of Public Policy, thanks for joining us. We'll continue talking about THCs, the new regulatory environment in Texas. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. We'll be right back. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. There was a huge sigh of relief in July when Governor Greg Abbott vetoed SB 3. That was Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick's. He shepherded that bill through, which was a virtual ban on all THC products in Texas. And the stakes were substantial. The Texas hemp industry represents a major economic engine. A 2025 report estimates it generates $5.5 billion in annual sales. It supports over 53,000 jobs. It has a total economic impact of over $10 billion. A ban would have eliminated over 40,000 of these jobs and cost the state's economy over $7 billion. Instead, now we have an executive order and an evolving regulatory framework. But will this work? Will this accomplish what people are angling for, which is a way to try to keep THC products out of the hands of young people, but still allow adults who need these products, want these products, demand these products, will they still have access to them? You can call in with your questions and comments, 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. Let's go to a caller. We have Samir. Samir, thanks for calling in. You're on the air.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my call. So I'm wondering, why can't this be regulated more like alcohol? So in a sense, if the gas stations are the problem, why can't we just ban it from gas stations, use like a dispensary model? There's a couple stores. One is named Grass. There's another one, Kush Kingpin, where I actually met the chemist, the grower. They break down everything. They can tell you where it's grown, what's in it, how it was made, where it was made. So there's this weird gap between the gas station and the people that are doing it the right way. Why couldn't that just be a TABC enforcement issue and let the TABC deal with this as they deal with alcohol and tobacco? That was just my kind of thought on trying
to simplify. A lot of people have asked that same question, Samir. Let's get a good answer from Cynthia Cabrera, the president of the Texas Hemp Business Council. Cynthia.
Hi, Samir. There's a lot to unpack there, and I just want to refer to what we were discussing prior to the break. Dave, I think you said something like if we don't get the Governor Abbott's executive order fleshed out and then we end up in the next session in 2027, there will be the Wild West in that interim. I want to be clear. There is no Wild West. That's a good talking point, and it's, you know, it's been repeated a lot by certain legislators, but there have been regulations on the books since 2019, which include extensive testing, full panel testing, labeling requirements. What's been missing on the state's side is enforcement. So it's pointless to make rules and regulations and then not enforce them. So Samir, your question about moving everything to TABC, that's kind of complicated because number one, TABC has very specific rules about how products can be sold. They have to go through the three-tier system, so you're automatically going to shut out a lot of the vendors that are there because of the way the three-tier system works. In addition to which, you mentioned two stores just now, and I think you were referring to the flower that they sell. Flower is on the chopping block in these executive orders. So flower, you know, they're looking to enforce on the original definition. that Texas has, which mirrors what the USDA has. So that would not necessarily help those stores if that's the primary product.
Right. So let me see if I understand that correctly. So I know they have the rollable hemp flower that is for sale. So that's the bud. That's what we're talking about, right?
Yes.
Okay.
That's what I'm talking about. Yeah. Yes.
Okay. Just to be clear. And so I don't know if the TABC, I mean, they basically, you know, it's the alcohol industry has seemed hostile to the hemp industry, and that may not be a good match. I don't know. Cynthia?
They have been pretty hostile. I mean, there were, starting earlier this year, a lot of campaigns against the hemp industry and the idea that nobody knows what's in it. Listen, if you look at deaths and alcohol-related illnesses versus hemp-derived cannabinoid deaths, zero, or illnesses, alcohol is far worse for you. Texas is the number one state for vehicular accidents involving drinking and driving. Alcohol is not your friend. There are reports that come out that alcohol, you know, now they find out that alcohol causes cancer, that kind of thing. And I understand where they're coming from. The opposition is coming from, you know, they see a very large reduction in sales because people are switching over to these alternatives, which aren't as harsh on their body as alcohol is. Every human has an endocannabinoid system, the ECS, which means that every human being is built and has cannabinoid receptors in their body. Nobody has alcohol receptors. Your body takes in alcohol like it's a poison. So a lot of consumers are making the choice to move over to something that they believe is far less harmful for them and much more beneficial. And that is a threat to sales on the alcohol side.
Well, people say they feel better the next day. You know, they don't feel hungover.
Correct.
I haven't tried it, so I don't know.
Well, I can tell you that I hardly drink. And last week we had some business dinners or whatever. And I had a couple of drinks, which I rarely do. And I was just wrecked the next day.
Well, we really want to, you know, lean into what our listeners know. Tell us what you think and how you incorporate these products into your life and if they're working for you and what questions or concerns you might have. 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. It would really be helpful to crowdsource what all of y'all know and have had experience or what your concerns are. Call in 833-877-8255. So this one rule that it was part of Governor Abbott's executive order that you had to be 21 years older to go into a store that sells these products. Does that immediately mean that they have to come out of the convenience stores? Because, you know, anyone can go into an ice house.
Yes, that's what it would mean.
Mm-hmm. And is that happening?
It should be. I mean, I will say that, you know, this first meeting, the TABC meeting is next week. And so some people could be waiting, standing by to see what happens or what language specifically comes out of that meeting, which is fair. I get that. So we'll see what happens after Tuesday.
Enforcement is going to be really important. And it's not until we start reading about it that there were some places that were fined or ticketed or shut down because they weren't following these rules. And I think that's when people realize, oh, they really mean it. This is for real. So should we be looking forward to seeing about that?
Well, you know, it's interesting because this past year, you know, during all these hearings and that kind of thing, we heard a lot about how businesses are breaking the law and they're not doing things right. Well, then go enforce on them. If people are breaking the law, you should enforce. And no one would have I certainly don't have a problem with that. If someone is breaking the law, they should be enforced on. And so I think that people taking enforcement seriously is great. And then the enforcement also has to happen.
And so you mentioned that there was some questions about the labeling. Well, I've got a caller. Let me go to a caller, Maria. And Maria, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi. So I know that you asked about the impacts that it's having on our daily lives in the workplace and how we're using it. I'm a daily user, and I have seen how it has made it possible for me to be able to communicate more effectively and also be able to attend things like workplace meetings and not feel as anxious. And I cannot speak to how helpful it's been. I really can't support any policies or politicians that want to take this away from me now, because it's a tool that I can't see myself without.
And do you have a specific product that you rely on that you know works for you, and that's the thing that you go for and you buy it at
initially,
a specific place?
I wanted to try to minimize those unknown chemicals that were in vaping. So I started out by trying the flower, and because of social stigmas and the risk of getting potentially stopped and searched, I had to do away with that, and I actually started to rely on vaping. And that risk felt like it was minimized. So now that that's gone, I'm wondering where to go next.
Well, Maria, thank you for calling in. We appreciate your input on that. Any reaction to Maria's call, Cynthia?
Yes, during the veto campaign, after the ban passed, and I can tell you that the ban was not popular with legislators. They were, you know, held at gunpoint in terms of school funding. If you don't pass a ban, we're not going to get school funding. So, you know, dirty little tricks like that. But as part of the veto campaign, where we were doing outreach to the governor's office, we delivered to the governor's office over 150,000 electronic petition signatures and letters, in addition to the fact that we collected 10,000 handwritten letters to the governor. And, you know, we had to read through these letters to make sure they were appropriate and that kind of thing. And so I think we discarded maybe 2,000 of them, but I read thousands. I personally read thousands of letters, and they were so compelling and so moving. And it was, you know, hey, I'm a 72-year-old grandmother and I use these products to sleep. Hey, I'm a 57-year-old veteran and these products have saved my life. I mean, it was, sometimes I'd have to just stop reading the letters because they were the amount of outcry and anguish that people were expressing at having these products taken away from them was incredible. I mean, it was so moving. It was really something.
And yet the vapes have been taken away. THC vapes are no longer available. And I'm going to ask you a little bit more about that. And I'm going to get Alfonso. He's called in. I'll put you on the air when we come back, Alfonso. Hang on. And if you want to join the conversation, we'd love to hear about your experiences and what you're thinking, how you use these products. 833-877-8255, 833-TPR Talk. And The Source continues after a 1 minute break. Stay with us. You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio. We're talking about THC sales in Texas. We had a ban that was passed in the regular legislative session. It was vetoed by Governor Abbott. Public polling showed overwhelmingly that the people favored regulation over prohibition. Strong majority of Texas voters, including Republicans, were supporting measures like age restrictions and warning labels. And so that's what we have now due to this executive order, but it's still an evolving framework. What are we seeing? Where is this going? Will this impact the access that many people now depend on for THC products? Call in with your questions and comments. Tell us how you use these products. 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. And let's go to Alfonso. Alfonso, you're on the air.
Hello. Yes, sir. I hope you're having a wonderful, beautiful day. And yeah. I was just wondering, just like in beers and alcohol, it says drink responsibly. It doesn't say drink the whole thing. It says responsibly. It should be the same way with marijuana. And it usually is with people who are doing it. We're taking it, and it's a reset. It helps our brain and our body. And so much beneficials instead of cons. And just like New York, whenever they had their their Black Lives Matter, in order to shut them down and to quiet them, they made weed legal, and it stopped everything. It really did. I'd noticed that, and I was studying it from Texas, and it it really calmed everything down. It right. did. And yes,
well,
sir.
Alfonso, well, thank you for your call. We appreciate that. So drink responsibly, use these products responsibly, Cynthia Caprera.
Yes, everyone should do that for everything. I had a conversation with a legislator not too long ago, and he said, so people should just take this as they see fit. And I said, well, that's what happens when you take a Tylenol or three Tylenol. You have determined what works for you, what serving size works for you, and you are taking that. You can ingest an entire bottle of Tylenol, and it's not going to go well for you. You're going to have a really bad tummy ache.
You're going to have a liver problem.
A liver problem, exactly, a liver problem. So everyone, it's incumbent on adults to do their research, and I urge people, and I really recommend that people do that. And just to address Alfonso's other point, we're talking about the hemp-derived cannabinoid industry, which is legally different than the marijuana industry. Marijuana continues to be federally illegal. It is illegal in the state of Texas. Hemp-derived cannabinoids were legalized in 2018, federally, and then in 2019 in Texas.
Well, so, but in a sense, though, it's kind of like, what is the distinction? So the marijuana is illegal, but hemp isn't, but they're basically the same plant, right?
The distinction is in the legal definition. So one is below a certain percentage. So hemp has to be below 0.3% Delta 9 THC in order to be legal, and marijuana can go up to like 30%. So that's the difference.
And Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick, you know, he's opposed to the regulation. He says that that these products are way beyond that limit that you said.
Is and that I right? go back to, well, that's what he said.
I know, and I don't know whether to believe him or not, but, you know, you tell me.
Well, I go back to my previous point about enforcement. If you know that people are selling products that are above the limit, why aren't you enforcing on them?
All right, let's go to a caller, Dominic. Dominic, you're on the air, bud. Go ahead.
Hey, how's it going? Can you hear me?
Yes, sir. You sound great.
Yep. Yeah. Yes, I'm a veteran. I use, in apologies, I do want to make clarification. It's Delta 8 is actually what's legal, and there's a limit on how much Delta 9 can be in there. So Delta 8 actually is in that farm bill that you were discussing. But for the most part, veteran, I turn to the Delta 8 to be used as far as, like, to get off my dependency of alcohol. It's one of the things I would use for previous trauma, and then also looking at the aspect of just regular stress. As opposed to drinking a six-pack, potentially more at night, I can just take a 1 to 2 ounce shot of the Delta 8 THC that you can buy at a liquor store, and I'm good to go. And I just wanted to share my piece. That's it.
Well, Dominic, thank you for your call. And Cynthia, I know you work with veteran organizations, don't you?
Yes, we do. We work very closely with them, and they were great allies during this fight and in previous sessions as well. This is a life-changing product for them, and they are very grateful to have it. And, you know, it really defies logic that a state could be grateful to veterans for laying down their lives and, you know, sacrificing, and then say, hey, but you can't use this thing, or you can't make your own decision. And to address what Dominic just said, the Farm Bill definition for hemp is anything below any hemp is described as or defined as anything below 0.3% Delta 9 THC. It includes isomers, extracts, salts, salts of isomers. It's a very, very broad definition, but Delta 8 is never mentioned in the Farm Bill definition. What is defined is the level of Delta 9 THC. So by extension, and it has been confirmed by the USDA that they did intend for hemp to spur innovation and to spur production and that kind of thing. And that is what has happened.
Let's go to caller Cecilia. Cecilia, thanks for calling in. You're on the air.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I am a cancer survivor. I had breast cancer. And let me tell you, the THC gummies that my family provided for me, the ones who live in legal states, really helped so much. I don't know what I would have done without them. I had an infection. And, you know, after the chemo, I had so much pain, and then I would take one of these THC gummies, a low dose, and the pain would go away. And then I didn't have those feelings of doom and gloom. It was just, I don't know, it just seems to me cruel to take something like that, this wonder drug, away from people, especially people like me who had to go through a very traumatic experience filled with pain and sadness. And it was just, it just makes me sad that it just seems so, I mean, it's something that you can grow in your backyard, and it's illegal and it's natural, and it just makes me sad. And that's really all I wanted to say.
Well, Cecilia, I'm so glad you're doing a lot better, and I appreciate you calling in. Any reaction to that, Cynthia?
Yeah, I as I mentioned earlier, I read thousands of letters, and there were so many like that. People who, and here's the thing, everyone does not want to rely exclusively on the pharmaceutical industry. And I think that as adults, and when you're not living in a nanny state, adults should be able to decide what works for them and what doesn't. You know, if I have a stomach ache, I may make myself some chamomile tea. I don't necessarily go and call the doctor and say, hey, you know, I need to come in. I need drugs or whatever. And by the way, chamomile tea puts me to sleep. Like, it's so potent, you know, the flower, that it puts me to sleep. So I totally understand the previous caller's sentiment. I read thousands of letters. I heard hundreds of people testify to that effect, that they found something that worked for them and they did not want to lose it. And overwhelmingly, there were multiple polls conducted, one most recently that showed that 96%, and I believe they were GOP voters, it was 1,200 voters, but 96% of them did not believe that this THC situation created by the lieutenant governor was worth the legislature's time. There's no emergency. They could have easily put in an age gate and restricted access to minors. So you have to ask yourself, whose will is being done here? Is it the will of the people or the will of a couple of legislators who just don't like something?
And chamomile, manzanilla tea, totally legal.
Yep. Yes, exactly.
All right, let's go to let's go to Valerie on the phone. Valerie, thanks for calling in. You're on the air.
Hi. I just want to say that I definitely think THC should be legal for those who want to use it. However, I feel like a lot of people that are calling in, describing their usage are also describing a substance abuse disorder. I mean, that's why we enjoy drugs. You know, that's why people like to do drugs. That's why people like to do alcohol, because it makes you feel good. But to rely on it to get through your day and through your normal stressors, is that not like the definition of a substance abuse disorder?
Valerie, thank you for raising that important question. You know, when people do have social anxiety, they have chronic pain, they have other issues. I don't know. But Cynthia Cabrera, your answer?
Well, I have had some conversations in terms of, you know, what is addiction? And my understanding, and I am not a counselor or a therapist, my understanding is that addiction is something, it's an addiction when it interferes with your life or your relationships. If it's beneficial, if it's taking the anxiety away and allowing you to be a better person, I'm not really going to argue with that. Also, I think that everyone is different. I'm not going to tell a veteran who's suffering from PTSD that they have a substance abuse problem. I mean, I know a veteran who used to, I think it was 9,000 pills a year or something like that. It was just a ridiculous number of pills. And I'm not going to tell a veteran or, you know, an adult that they are not able to decide what works for them. As long as it's not interfering with their life or their relationships, I think that as adults in a still sort of free country, we should be able to make that decision.
So we're short on time, but where do you see this going? Are you satisfied right now with where what Governor Abbott's order looks like? And do you think, I mean, I'm worried about the fees. Will these fees that he's recommending be onerous and, you know, shut down shops? What would it look like?
Well, the devil is in the details. I mentioned to somebody this morning, there are a lot of ways that this could go wrong. So we just have to make sure that we're part of the process and ensure that, to your point, fees are not astronomical or something that puts other people out of business or makes it difficult for adult consumers to get the products.
So stay engaged, follow what's happening, talk
Absolutely.
To your lawmakers and make sure that we get something that does protect kids. I think that needs to be the priority, but also
Agreed.
Other things. Cynthia Cabrera, thank you so much for talking to us today. She's the president of the Texas Hemp Business Council and other things. Thank you so much, Cynthia.
Thank you so much.
That's The Source on Texas Public Radio. Thanks for listening.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted by David Martin Davies. Tim Gutierrez is the show's producer. Additional production support from Steve Short, Ruben Garcia, Yvette Benavides, and Dan Katz, Vice President of News. The Source is made possible with support from the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.